Well, today we get to pick up on the commandments, the series that we've been going through, and taking a look at, maybe it's this microphone right here. I think that's the commandments that we've been going through. Now, I hope that as we've gone through the first three commandments, you've come away with a sense, a deeper sense of who God is. I hope you've come away with a deeper sense of how to love God. Because as we've talked about, what is the purpose of the commandment? To love God. The purpose of the commandments, if we look at all the commandments, what we should be taking from them is a deeper love for God and a deeper love for mankind. If we don't see that, if that's not what it's teaching us, we're missing the message. We're missing the point of the commandments. The commandments are holistic. You know, James says, if you break one, if you keep one commandment but you break another, he says you break the whole law. Because it's all part of one thing. Love is broken when you break the law. For this is the love of God, it says in 1 John 5:3, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome to us. When He says, do not steal and do not lie, He gives two commandments that teach us how to love our neighbor. Now, it's more than just what not to do, it's what to do. And I hope that's the other thing you're getting in these messages, what to do. What does God want? Not just the letter of the law, but what is the spirit of the law? Not just don't make an engraven image, but have the true image of God. Not just don't take His name in vain, but raise it up and exalt it in your life, in the way that you live. That God would be first, that God would be raised up. That we walk with the dignity of Christians, to be the children of God, to bear that name with the honor that God has bestowed upon us, to call us His children. And so this commandment, the fourth one that we get to today, continues on. Now, this commandment is going to be a little different than the other ones we've gone through because I have a lot of background work to do on this one. So we're going to take 2 weeks. And what I really want to convey to you is what I'm going to talk about next week. So that's your teaser to get you back next week. You don't want to miss next week. But this week, we have to do this. But here's the reason why. If I was giving this sermon any time from before the year 1900, I don't think I'd have to give the first part of this sermon. I don't think I'd have to give this message today because it would be common knowledge. But things have changed so much in our society over the last 100 years. This isn't a commandment that is very well remembered. Let's turn back to Exodus chapter 20. Exodus chapter 20. We'll probably go back here a couple times today, so if you want to put a little marker in there. I think we got some Bibles out. I don't know if Pastor Jack did that, but if you need a Bible, does anybody need a Bible that would like a Bible, raise your hand. Would you like one? Anybody else? We're going to start here in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Very straightforward command that God gives. Now, I think it's interesting that when God gives this commandment, He says, remember. That's the first thing, remember. Why do you think God would say remember? Why start the commandment with remember? He knows we're going to forget. You know, you remember when you were young and your dad was trying to impress something on you, and he'd say, son, remember. I remember my dad used to do that a lot. Or, you know, maybe daughter, remember this. This is important. Remember this. Remember. Bring it back. Don't forget what I've done. Now he says, notice, 6 days you shall work. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, verse 9. Now let's look at this part of the command first. This is part of the command that is not often focused upon, but this is just important too. So hold your place here. Let's turn over to 1 Timothy 8. We're just going to grab a couple verses here on this. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, it says this, "But if anyone does not provide for his own house, and especially of those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So that's part of this concept of work, to provide for your own house. Part of the work that God has given us to do is to be a provider for our house, whether it's spiritually, financially, physically, emotionally. This is our work. Moms know this work better than anyone because they don't get away from it too often. If you're a mom that stays home with your kids, it's a morning till night job, right? But you're there to provide for your household. Men, same thing. We're here to provide. This is part of the commandment. 6 days you shall work and do all your labor. It's part of this process. Notice in Colossians here, chapter 3 and verse 23, Colossians 3 and verse 23, it says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." So remember that when you do your work, that the person you're working for is Jesus Christ. Work as if He was your boss. Work as if He was the one who hired you. Work as if He's the one who gave you life, because He is. He's your Lord. Work for Him. And I'll tell you, when you make Jesus your boss, I think it makes you a little more on top of things, to realize it's not just about getting through. It's not just about cutting the corners. It's about doing things heartily as unto the Lord, showing a whole way of life. Having fun. All right, back to Exodus chapter 20. So the first part of the command is, 6 days you shall work and do all your labor. And God says, when you labor, do it as unto me. Do it as unto the Lord. Work hard. Provide for yourself. Provide for your own. Provide for your household. Now in verse 10 here, he says, the seventh day, Exodus 20 verse 10, the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. I want you to just let that sink in a little bit. Whose day is it? Because a lot of times this thing gets challenged. I'm asking you, whose day is it? Let's turn back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 is the creation. And God goes through and shows how He made everything we see. Now this is one of the biggest beliefs that's challenged, right? That God created everything. In our society, we're taught many other things, that God is not the creator. We talk about evolution and things that happen and things that come about by chance. But God, in the very first chapter, identifies that He is the creator of the heavens and the earth. He's the maker of all these things. He says, "I made the sun. I made the moon. I made the stars. I made the earth. I made the sea. I made the ocean. Everything that's in the ocean. I made the grass, the trees, and everything you see on the earth." God declares in chapter 1 of the whole book that He made all these things. Do you believe that? When you go outside, you look at that beautiful sky out there and you say, "God made that." Those mountains, that God made that. Everything that we can see, touch, God made these things. Now notice in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended His work which He had done, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had done. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it He rested from all His work which God had created and made. This is the history of the heavens and earth when they were created, in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens." Do you believe that? It said that God blessed and sanctified the seventh day. I ask you that because I asked you, did you believe that He made the trees outside? Did He make the mountains outside? Did He make the sun outside? When He says that He made the seventh day blessed and sanctified, do you believe that as well? So that's a question you have to ask. Because there's something about this thing of God blessing and sanctifying a day. You don't see it. You don't smell it. You can't touch it. You can't taste it. Scientifically, you can't prove it. The only way that you know that there is a day that is blessed and sanctified is because He says it. The only way you would ever acknowledge the day as being a Sabbath is because you found it from Him here. You're not going to scientifically discern a day is blessed. They all feel, look, smell. Well, maybe not if you're in New Jersey. But they all are the same. The days are the same. So you realize that this commandment in itself presupposes a faith in God that He actually did bless and sanctify this day. Because physically you're not going to figure it out. You can't figure it out. You have to believe this. You have to put your faith in this, that He said that He did it. Now, what is a day? What is the Sabbath? There's a question that I get asked once in a while. Notice here in Genesis 1, God makes this very clear. If you look in verse 5 here, it says, so the evening and the morning were the first day. When does an evening begin? When does it end? The evening and the morning were the first day. Verse 8, the evening and the morning were the first day. 13, so the evening and the morning were the third day. Verse 19, so the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Verse 23, so the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Verse 31, so the evening and the morning were the sixth day. What is a day? It begins in the evening, goes through the next day. So when you think about days and the way God constructs His day, you say, well, how do I know when the day is? Does it begin at 6 a.m., 12, when the sun comes up? No, it begins in the evening. The evening and the morning, the day. That makes a day. So we have that. Now, who is it? When we think of this, who is it who made this day? I want you to identify with this. Let's turn over to John. John chapter 1. So as we look at this day, the seventh day, and it's been basically regarded throughout much of history, and certainly since God re-revealed this day, going back to the time when He took the Israelites out of Egypt, it would be our Friday evening, what we would call Friday evening through Saturday would be the Sabbath day. Now notice this in John 1. This is speaking of Jesus. Now in the beginning was the Word, speaking of Jesus, the Word was with God, the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Notice, all things were made through Him, and without Him, nothing was made that was made. The Word made these things. Notice verse 14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. He was who we know as Jesus. He's the one who made. Notice in Colossians 1 and verse 16, Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. Colossians 1 and verse 16. For by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth. This is speaking of Jesus again. Visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through Him and for Him. So when you think about and answer this question, who made the Sabbath? Jesus. Jesus did. This wasn't something, you know, sometimes we like to differentiate between our Father in heaven and Jesus. But, of course, our Father made all things through His Son, Jesus Christ. But it was Jesus. This is Jesus' day. All things were made by Him, both seen and unseen, visible and invisible. And as I said, you can't see this. The only way you know that this day exists, blessed and sanctified, is by revelation from God. By revelation from God. And that means God had to reveal it. So let's turn back to Exodus 16. Let's see how He revealed this day. This is even here before the Ten Commandments, but an example. Now you might recall that the Israelites, the people of God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they had been in slavery for 430 years, and God redeemed them out of Egypt, and He brought them out. Notice what He does here in Exodus 16. Let's begin in verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." Okay, so here's what God's doing. He's saying, I'm gonna test to see what they're gonna do. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather. So He's gonna rain bread because they're in this wilderness. They're totally dependent upon God. And He's gonna do something here to test them whether or not they're gonna obey His laws, what He wants done. So notice now, let's pick it up in verse 16. So He's telling them about this bread, this manna from heaven. And it says in 16, "This is the thing that the Lord has commanded. Let every man gather it according to each one's need. One omer for each person, according to the number of persons. Let every man take for those who are in his tent." So then the children of Israel did so and gathered some more, some less. And when they measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing left over. He who gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered according to each one's need. And Moses said, "Now let no one leave any of it till morning." Notwithstanding, they did not heed Moses, but some of them left part of it until morning, and the bread worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. And so, you have this problem. God says, "I'm going to provide this, but if you leave it over, it's going to get nasty. This goes away pretty quickly. The bread that God rains, you got to get rid of it. Eat it that day. Don't leave any over till the next day. Don't try to store it up." You know, everybody says, "But I need a little for tomorrow morning. Maybe I could have a snack before I go out to gather the bread again, right? Get that little bedtime snack or something," and you're thinking maybe you don't. But it's gone by the next morning. It's no good. So then verse 21, "So they gathered it every morning, every man according to his need, and when the sun became hot, it melted. And so it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said to them, 'This is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord.'" Now, you remember we read this in Exodus chapter 20? Who was the Sabbath holy to? The Lord. Who made the Sabbath, blessed it, and made it holy after creation? The Lord. And who's the Sabbath holy to? The Lord. Before there ever was a Levite, before there ever was a Jew, before there ever was Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, before Noah, God made the Sabbath day holy. Remember that. It's His God's. I'm not talking to you today about a Jewish Sabbath. I'm talking to you about God's Sabbath. What we read about in the Bible. That's what we're talking about today. We're talking about God's Sabbath. And so so we have to remember that and remember what God Himself says of it. Because He's the one who said. So He says, this is the Sabbath day. Let's drop down now to verse 25. It says, "Moses said, 'Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none.'" Now, God is trying to show something. Remember I said the Sabbath has to be revealed. You're not going to discern it of your own things. So God's saying, "Look, I'm going to rain this bread from heaven." Neat, huh? And it's going to come down, and it's going to be there. And every day when the sun gets hot, it's going to melt away. So go out in the morning, gather it up, and this is what you're going to eat. I'm going to feed you in this wilderness where there's nothing with this bread I'm going to rain from heaven. So they go out, the first day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day of the week. He says, now on the sixth day, gather up two. Now they might have been wondering, wait, when we tried to gather up extra earlier in the week, it was rotten the next day. So on the sixth day, he says, do what you couldn't do on days 1 through 5. On the sixth day, gather twice as much. Because on the seventh day, I'm not raining any. I'm not going to rain any for you. And so, Moses gives this instruction. Now, what do the people think about this? They kept some over, and it got rotten. Now, look at 27. Now, it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather. They found none. It wasn't there. And the Lord said, notice who says this. The Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? I told you. See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Now realize that this was a people that had been enslaved for 430 years. They were used to working every day. Slavery is tough. Slavery is not easy. You don't get to say for yourself. Remember even Jesus when he was talking about slaves and servants? He said the servant's out working all day in the field, and when he comes back in, he doesn't get to prepare some food and eat for himself. No, first he serves food to his master, and then he gets some food to eat. It's tough being a slave. You're working all the time. God, in his mercy, saying, I'm giving you a day off. I'm giving you a day of rest. Let all the busyness and the work, I want you to rest. Have a day off. He wanted to give them freedom from work, but the people went out to look for food anyway. He said, you don't have to do that. I'm giving you the day off. People are funny this way. They want to fight against the day off. I like the day off. I need it, frankly. I enjoy having time off. But they went out to look. And so, he says in verse 29, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. He does a miracle with his own bread. Because the bread goes bad when the sun comes out. But on the sixth day, he makes it, he sustains it. So not only does it last for the sixth, it lasts for the seventh day. They have enough. He's doing a miracle to reveal what can only come from God, and that is the great creator of the universe blessed and sanctified this day, and it's going to happen this way. Now, the end of the book here, the end of the chapter of 35, it says that this happened for 40 years. 40 years, the Israelites got a reminder that they gathered twice on the sixth day so they could rest on the seventh day. They gathered the five, they gathered twice on the sixth day to rest on the seventh. They gather the five, they gather twice on the sixth day, so they rest on the seventh. It went like this for 40 years. That's a lot of revealing. 40 years of a physical point. He's saying, I'm going to see, you will see that the bread doesn't come down on my Sabbath day. You will smell that if you keep it on the first days, it's going to stink, but you're going to also witness and touch and taste that it's good. What you gather on the sixth day unto the seventh day. Very physically, he showed and revealed the Sabbath day to the people of Israel. He called them out and he physically demonstrated this to be his reality. We need to live in his reality. His revealed life. His revealed world. He is the creator. And he goes beyond what we can taste and see and touch. He is from everlasting to everlasting. He is spiritual, he's eternal, he's immortal, and he's inviting us into something that only he has. You see, if you don't know him, you don't know about this. You only know about this when you know him. And so like a father coming along his son, when we get to the commandments, he puts his arm around his son and says, son, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days work and do all your labor. The seventh day is the Sabbath. Rest to the Lord. Remember that. Remember this day. Now it's interesting how these things come about in mankind, and what happens to the Sabbath. As I said, it's a sign, it's a revelation. Exodus 31 and verse 12. We're going to start moving a little quicker now. Exodus 31 and verse 12, it says, the Lord said, "Speak to the children of Israel, surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you." Now, we can read the rest of this later. Just go ahead and read through 18 on your own. But here's the point I want to make about this, at least before we move forward, and that is this. It is a sign between me and you. And it is because, only because He reveals it, do we know it. Only by faith would you acknowledge it, because you can't see it. It's something that He says is holy, and only if you believe that He made it holy would you ever acknowledge it as such. It's the only way. It's the only way that you would ever know. So there's good information here also about how powerful this commandment is. It does have the death penalty on it here in Exodus. I always take note of that, because God says about His commandments, you could say the weightiest things, death for those who break it. People did die for breaking the Sabbath day. I bring that up because the wages of sin is death. The commandments that brought death held a judgment over us. When we break or have broken a commandment, we bring upon ourselves the penalty of death. But how do we escape that? How have we escaped that? Through Jesus Christ. He is our Savior. He is our righteousness. But it's important to consider that this penalty, or the breaking of the Sabbath, held the penalty of death. When Jesus died, He paid for this penalty too. This penalty of death. Because that's what the Bible proclaims. It was for those who break the Sabbath that they would suffer death. He paid that price. Okay, now let's look at Jesus. Did Jesus keep the Sabbath? Let's turn over to Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4 and verse 16. And it says, "So he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his custom was," this is what Jesus did, Jesus who never sinned, Jesus who was God in the flesh, "he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day." That was his custom, that he did go to meet. In Leviticus 23, it talks about the Sabbath being a holy convocation. It's a time of meeting. Turn over to Mark 2, Mark chapter 2, and verse 27. Jesus said, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." So here's something interesting that we can learn. The Sabbath was made for man. Man was not made for the Sabbath. And sometimes, we'll talk about this next week, sometimes we don't realize the purpose of the Sabbath, and we think man was made for the Sabbath. Man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man, a gift to mankind. A day of rest, as we've already talked about. Freedom, liberty, a time of resting. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And also, notice Jesus. What does He say about this day? He says, "I'm Lord of it. I'm Lord of the Sabbath day." Now, Jesus is Lord of every day, right? Right? Every day is His. But it's the only day that He ever says He's Lord of in the whole Bible. He says, "I'm Lord of the Sabbath day." He calls it His day. But what about His disciples? Did they keep the Sabbath? Was there any discouragement in them doing this? Notice Luke 23 and verse 56. Luke 23 and verse 56. This was after Jesus had died. It says, "They returned and prepared spices," speaking of His disciples who were preparing to anoint His body after His death. It said, "They prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment." Now Jesus said, "Don't think that I came to destroy the law. Don't think that I came to do away with it." He said, "I came to fulfill it." But we can see from His disciples, they're keeping it. Even after His death, there wasn't something that was being discouraged in them by Jesus to stop doing this. They kept the Sabbath after His death. Notice here in Acts chapter 17 now, after the ascension of Jesus. Acts chapter 17, verse 2. It says, "Paul, as his custom was," again, remember Jesus had a custom that He went on the Sabbath day to do this. Paul, as his custom was, went into them and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them according to the Scriptures. And in 18 verse 4, and he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath. And notice, he persuaded both Jews and Greeks. Again, in the synagogues, on the Sabbath, people who were coming to God, not just Jews, Jews and Greeks, Jews and Gentiles both, that he was teaching to. Now that's one of the things sometimes we might hear about the Sabbath. Is it a day that Gentiles ever kept? I've heard often, Gentiles don't keep these days. Right? Well, let's see if the Bible will back that up. Let's turn to Acts chapter 13. I think we already kind of read that there in 18. But let's Acts chapter 13. We've talked about that this day was made before there was a Jew, before there was Judah. Right? Before there even was Judah, who all Jews are named after, this day was made. But notice what happens here in Acts 13. Acts 13, it says in verse 42, so the Jews went out of the synagogue because they were mad about what was being preached. They didn't like the message of the gospel. They didn't like what was going on. So notice, the Gentiles, after the Jews had gone out of the synagogue, the Gentiles begged that the words might be preached to them the next Sabbath. The Gentiles. Now when the congregation had broken up, many of the Jews and devout proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who speaking to them persuaded them to continue in the grace of God. Now on the next Sabbath, almost the whole city came together to hear the word of God. Gentiles. Gentiles. To hear the word of God on the next Sabbath. Remember, the Sabbath was made for man. The Sabbath was made for man. Acts 16. I just like this verse. There's no big doctrinal thing in this, but I think it's just a beautiful thing that God wanted to include this in the Bible. Acts chapter 16 and verse 3. It just tells a little something about what the disciples were doing. It was talking here about Paul and Timothy and Silas. They're going out. And Acts chapter 16, actually it's down in verse 13. And it says, and on the Sabbath day, this is again Paul, Timothy, and Silas, on the Sabbath day, we went out to the city, out of the city to the riverside, where prayer was customarily made, and we sat down and spoke to the women who met there. I think it's kind of a beautiful image of the Sabbath. It's like, you know, we kind of went out of the city, just to this quiet place where prayer was customarily made. And this is how we were spending our Sabbath day. But the point is, there's just an example of it here. There's an example of it here, of what they were doing. Now, here's a question. Will it be kept in the future? Let's turn to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, verse 17 says this. Matthew 24 and verse 17 says this. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be such great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So, here's a question. Pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be. Has that time happened yet? No. So Jesus prophesied about his disciples keeping the Sabbath before the great tribulation. So he prophesied it would be done before this time. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 66. Isaiah 66, verse 22. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I make, shall remain before me, says the Lord, so shall your descendants and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship before me, says the Lord. So again, we have a prophecy of a future time. So we've seen it at creation. We've seen it when God gave the Ten Commandments. And even before the Ten Commandments with the children of Israel, we see Jesus in the Sabbath. We see His disciples in the Sabbath. We see Jesus prophesying about His disciples in the Sabbath before the Great Tribulation. And finally, we see this prophecy that God says, all flesh will come before Me to worship Me on the Sabbath. So we have this thing about the Sabbath. Now, as I said, this is not really what I want to spend my time teaching about when it comes to the Sabbath, because it's the basic thing of the commandment. But it's not really the heart and intent. And I'll tell you, when you get into the New Testament, Jesus so beautifully explains how to make the Sabbath a delight, what the day is about, how to enter in. As we've talked of all the commandments spiritually entering in, this is a great day that God has made and has given as a blessing, a sign between He and His people, freedom of liberty. So we're going to talk about that next week. But here's one of the questions that comes up is, we read about today, we've read about what the Sabbath is, a day of rest. We've read when the day starts in the evening. We've read the Sabbath day is the seventh day. But now most of us Christians don't observe the seventh day Sabbath. Now, how many of you, when you were growing up, wherever you lived, had days off on Sunday when it came to places, malls, schools, businesses? Things were common. Where I grew up in Illinois, you could not go to a mall on Sunday. Every Sears store closed on Sundays. Carson's was closed. Still to this day, when you go back to Illinois, you cannot buy a car on Sunday because they never reversed that law. You still can't buy a car on Sunday. Auto dealers like it. It's like, hey, day off. You know, Sabbath rest. But the thing is, it used to be this way. And that's why I said, 100 years ago, I would not have had to give this message going through the basic scriptures about this day, because most Christians acknowledged it either as a seventh day or as a first day. Obviously, primarily a first day was a Sabbath being kept. My mom tells me the story in the Lutheran church. When she grew up, she was born in 1931, they taught it. You memorize the commandments, and Sunday was the Sabbath day, and people took it as a day of rest. That was the way it was. Society has changed so much, we have forgotten what Christians did for 1900 years after Jesus Christ. They were observing the Sabbath day, whether on the seventh day or on the first day. Now, I want to take a look here at a couple quotes, because you say, well, okay, when did this first day concept start? Now, people were worshiping God. You can worship God any day of the week. Any day. In fact, you should be worshiping Him every day of the week. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something, not that we're worshiping God, but something God said He made. And again, that is what I want us to focus on. This isn't about our day, my day, Jews' day. It's God's day. That is the difference. But it was back in councils in the 4th century, all this started changing. In fact, there was a council that said in 363, 364 AD in Laodicea that we should be observing, or we should be reading scriptures every Sabbath day. It was one of the canons that came out. One of their statements that they had decided. Scripture should be read on the Sabbath day. But they said later that nobody should anymore be resting on the Sabbath day, because we're looking too Jewish. So we need to stop resting, and instead let's honor the first day. And they said, and if anybody keeps resting on the seventh day, they are anathema to Christ. And this was written down. You can read it. You can go on the internet, because they have them all listed there. Canon number 29. It says, no more resting on the Sabbath day. Rather, you work, honor the first day, and if anybody keeps resting, they're anathema to Christ. 300 years, more than 300 years after Jesus Christ was resurrected, this came out. So that's where the change kind of took place. I want you to notice here, this is from a Catholic catechism. Now, one of the things that's great about the Catholic Church is they are good documenters. I always find it funny, if you ever watch like a movie where the mob is, why do they keep physical records of all their illegal activities? So I'm always like, what are you thinking, right? But they have journals, and if we can get the journals. Remember they got Al Capone? They went through all Al Capone's logs, and they found out he hadn't paid taxes on all these business entries. Why would you keep track of all this business if it was illegal? Doesn't make sense. But the Catholics were really good about keeping things done, because what we know is the Catholic Church today traces its origins back to here. You can see the Eastern Orthodox Church and Roman Catholic Church trace their origins. So here is the Catechism. Now this was copyrighted in 1957. It says, what is the third commandment? Third commandment, and obviously we're on the fourth, and that's a whole another story for another day. The third commandment is, remember that thou keep holy the Sabbath day. Which is the Sabbath day? Saturday is the Sabbath day. Okay, so this is 1957. This is your Roman Catholic catechism. Good question here. Why do we observe Sunday instead of Saturday? The Catholic Church, after changing the day of rest from Saturday, the seventh day of the week, to Sunday, the first day, made the third commandment refer to Sunday as the day to be kept as the Lord's Day. You can also see this in the Catholic Encyclopedia, Volume 4, page 153. There's a reason why this got changed, why the practice changed. But again, this is right out of the Catholic Encyclopedia and also the same quotes from the Catechism. Now, regarding the change, this is also from the Catholic Church Extension Society. This is 1975, this is written. Regarding the change from the observance of the Jewish Sabbath to the Christian Sunday, I wish to draw your attention to the facts. Okay, so this is interesting. The Catholics saying, I'm going to draw, here's what's going on here. The Protestants who accept the Bible as the only rule of faith and religion should by all means go back to observance of the Sabbath. Now, this is kind of interesting. This is only, what, 30 years ago. Should by all means go back to the observance of the Sabbath. The fact that they do not, but on the contrary observe the Sunday, stultifies them in the eyes of every thinking man. And you're saying, what stultifies? I had to ask them. I asked myself the same question. Don't ever think that I'm some genius up here, right? So stultifies them in the eyes of every thinking man. So, stultify. To make or to cause to appear foolish. To render absurd, wholly futile, ineffectual, by degrading, frustrating, to allege or prove, to be of unsound mind. So what they're saying here, the Protestants who accept the Bible as the only rule of faith should go back to Sabbath. The fact that they do not, but on contrary observe Sunday, stultifies them in the eyes of every thinking man. They look foolish. How can you say you follow this and do the opposite? We just went through it. What does he say? This is continuing on. We Catholics do not accept the Bible as the only rule of faith. Besides the Bible, we have the living church, the authority of the church, as a rule to guide us. We say this church, instituted by Christ to teach and guide man through life, has the right to change the ceremonial laws of the Old Testament, and hence we accept her change of Sabbath to Sunday. We frankly say, yes, the church made this change, made this law, as she made many other laws, for instance, the Friday abstinence, which you remember you don't eat meat on Fridays, the unmarried priesthood, which was a, you can't find that in the Bible, laws concerning mixed marriages, the regulation of Catholic marriages, and 1,000 other laws. Okay. In essence, they're saying, look it, we had authority based on Matthew 18 to bind and loose certain things. If you believe that, you should be observing Sunday. They had the authority to do it. If you don't, he says, if you are truly protesting what we do, he says, then you got to believe this. It's your choice, he's saying. But he said, but to say that you're a Protestant and you don't do this, and you follow our authority by which we change the day, you're accepting our power and authority, so why do you say you protest? By your practice, you acknowledge we have the authority to do so. It's a reasoned argument, and it was made 30 years ago. And you can read a lot of these. This question for Catholics has come up over and over because I lived in a Catholic community. I went to a Lutheran church. You grew up on memorizing things like the Ten Commandments. And everybody, well, how come we don't do that one? And that's what gets said. I said it. I said it in grade school. I said, why don't we do this one? A child can read and say, this doesn't seem to apply. Continues on, it is always somewhat laughable to see the Protestant churches in pulpit and legislation demand the observance of Sunday, of which there is nothing in their Bible. So again, this is an argument reasoned out by the Catholics. Now here's the thing. As I said, for 1900 years, you will not find the modern day arguments that you hear so often today. They're just not, you're not going to find them. You look at even men of great revivals, whether it be Charles Finney. Did you know Charles Finney, great revivalist of America, said, don't expect a revival if you're not observing the Sabbath day. Jonathan Edwards kept the Sabbath day. You look back through history, the question was not whether or not to do it. The only question men struggled with is which day on which to do it. And somehow we think that the history that we hear on the radio when people talk about this commandment is reality. It's new stuff, guys. It's new stuff. You won't find it in the history of the church. Not for 1900 years after the time of Jesus Christ. Basically, you're not going to find it. Late 1800s started popping up. You see it. It didn't really become a proliferation in the church till the 20th century. So we have seen things change. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, when we look at this word, do we make null the commandments of God for the traditions of men or not? Now that's your choice. I'm not here to judge anybody on it. I'm just here to teach you what I read in my Bible. That's all I'm ever going to do. I don't police it. I don't judge it. I just teach it. Teach what's in here. And then you have to make those choices for yourself. What you do, what you believe, the way you live, the way you go. Now, I'm going to say this in closing, because I know I'm going over and my friends need to leave. I'm sorry. This day often ends up, in my eyes, becoming very legalistic in the way people approach it. And when Jesus was on the earth, that's what he dealt with. That this is not a day of legalism. This is not a day of rules. There is a great part of loving God and loving man that is in this commandment. And that's what I want to talk about next week. That's what I'm so excited to share with you, of what the Bible reveals about this day, about what this day is really about. Because people make this day more than it is. It's one of the ten. It's part of love, but it's not the whole thing. And it's not the banner that we gather under. Always remember that. We are under the banner of Jesus Christ. He is it. And what I want for us is that when people look at us, they say what is written in Revelation 14:12. Let's end by reading this verse. Revelation chapter 14 and verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Very simple, very pure. That's what we do. That's what I want us to be known by. That when people look, they say, here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. So let that be what is your patience. Let that be what is your life. That when people look at you, that is what they see. So we'll continue this on next week. Let's praise. Do you need to go?
One more song.
One more song. Bradley.